And good afternoon, and welcome to Soundbites, December 17th, 1989 edition. I'm Bob Smith, welcoming you aboard and inviting you to stay with us for the next hour as we review all that is new for those of us in the personal computer using community. During the first portion of our show, right after the news, we'll be talking with Paul Carroll, the technology correspondent of the Wall Street Journal, who'll help us make sense of all the changes in the marketplace and that Xerox Apple lawsuit as well, and how it's going to affect all of us. Then, during the second portion of the program, we'll be turning to the world of word processing with Mitch Pendleton of WordPerfect Corporation. He'll be letting us in on all the developments of his own WordPerfect program and how best to use word processing in your computer environment. All that and more coming up today on Soundbites, but first, the latest in computer news. Xerox is hauling Apple Computer into court, charging that Apple's Macintosh and Lisa operating software is a direct copy of the look and feel of the Star graphics system Xerox first unveiled almost a decade ago. The copier giant wants $150 million damages from Apple in the suit it filed in federal court in San Francisco on Thursday. Xerox spokesman Bob Wagner told me Friday that while full details of the talks are confidential, he could confirm that efforts to reach a licensing agreement and keep the case out of court went on until just about the last minute.
Can't speculate on what might have happened in the past because I don't know. I do know, however, that talks did go on until yesterday when they did break off.
And so you were ready to go in immediately after the talks broke off and say, hey, if this is the way we've got to go, we're going to do it.
Well, you know, papers are prepared well in advance, and contingencies are laid in place.
Xerox wants a jury trial for the case and has no plans to reopen talks toward an out-of-court settlement as of now. Meanwhile, Apple is rejecting all of Xerox's allegations. Carlene Lavasser is an Apple spokeswoman at corporate headquarters in Cupertino, California, and she told us she could assure users and Apple licensees that all is well.
At this point, we don't foresee problems. The reason for that is that we believe the claims are entirely without merit. We believe we have original works based on years of research and development investments. And we're confident that our works will be found to be original.
Apple told Soundbites it is ready to defend the originality of the Macintosh software vigorously in court and will not seek negotiations to license any of Xerox's prior products. Apple acknowledges that Star Graphics helped inspire its work with the Macintosh, but says it was only inspiration, not copyright infringement. Ultimately, a federal court will decide. That computer industry slowdown people have been expecting has apparently arrived. Wall Streeters are downgrading their assessment of Apple Computer, the industry's traditional number two player, even before the Xerox lawsuit. They've concluded its product line is aging and, in some respects, no longer competitively priced for the current market. Apple admits sales of its lower-end Apple II and least expensive Macintosh machines are running below expectations. The Macintosh SE, Apple's current low-end machine, company executives say their efforts to improve it are about a year away from bearing fruit. Another sign of competitiveness in the marketplace, IBM, which had announced free software bundles with purchases of lower mid-range PS2 models back in October, is now also offering a rebate on its mid-range model 55SX. The $200 cash back covers a machine with a 386SX microprocessor and your choice of DOS or OS2, as well as Microsoft Works and a group of tax, personal finance, and recreational programs. Given the massive restructuring of IBM and the weak performance of some of its competitors in recent weeks, we wondered if aggressive marketing and aggressive pricing is going to come to the consumer marketplace soon. We put that question to Wall Street Journal technology correspondent Paul Carroll.
Oh, I suspect that prices will drop a bit. If demand is soft, it only makes sense that people would cut prices to try to straighten out that problem. I think, though, that the effects won't be enormous. I think, if anything, some of the things that have gone on have reflected some problems, say, with delivery. Compaq has been a bit slower than expected in getting out some of these new 6-pound, really slick notebook-sized computers that they have. Apple also has apparently decided that it won't be able to bring out some low-end Macintoshes until at least late next year.
Paul will join us live minutes from now on Soundbites to examine the case of Xerox versus Apple and the state of the marketplace for us in the user community. Hoping to see a new Compaq laptop under the Christmas tree? Well, you may be disappointed. Compaq says demand for its new notebook-sized laptop model has been so strong their plant probably will not catch up until next summer. Company officials say consumer demand has been much stronger than expected, and early production glitches have held shipments down. Meanwhile, there has been trouble in getting 3.5-inch disk drives from the machine as well. But the drive supplier, Connor Peripherals, has ironed out the problems, and drive shipments are back to normal. Analysts say the combination of power, hard disk data storage, and competitive price are making it a major hit. And that's this week's Computer News. You're listening to Soundbites on WXXI 1370. I'm Bob Smith, and this has been a very busy week in the computer industry. Xerox suing Apple, Compaq telling customers to wait, and everybody reporting tougher competition and more aggressive pricing. Well, what does it all mean to us in the user community? We're going to check in with one of the industry's most dedicated watchers. Paul Carroll of the Wall Street Journal is on live line with me from the New York City area. And, of course, you have your chance to ask your questions at 263-WXXI, 263-9994, where our lines are now open. And, Paul, it's good to have you with us today.
It's good to be here.
Let me ask you this. First of all, we've heard about the Xerox-Apple lawsuit. It's making big headlines, obviously, here in Rochester, where Xerox has its main manufacturing facilities for North America and the world. Is it the kind of thing that's going to have potentially a big impact on all of us in the user community, do you think?
Oh, it's possible. It certainly has drawn a lot of attention. I was amused the other night to see that even David Letterman was making jokes about the Xerox-Apple lawsuit. But it's a little hard at this point to figure out exactly what the effect will be. These lawsuits have a way of dragging on for months and years even.
Well, of course, that being the case, since we're years and years, perhaps, away from any kind of settlement or resolution of this all, assuming that everybody is as hard and fast in their positions as they say they are out front, you think there's any possibility of them negotiating it out of court? They were trying up to the last minute.
That's my best guess as to what will happen. Apple has its own lawsuit concerning the look and feel of the Macintosh against Microsoft and Hewlett-Packard, and that's an important enough lawsuit to Apple is endangered enough by the Xerox claims that I don't think that that Apple really can afford to lose. So the best guess among the lawyers I talked to is that sometime in the next year or so, Apple will agree to pay Xerox something to give up its claims.
But, of course, doesn't that call their claim against Hewlett-Packard and Microsoft and the rest into question, too? And couldn't it be then that Xerox will end up suing them and trying to enforce its claims? I mean, you can see a whole chain boxcars worth of lawsuits, can't you, potentially?
Potentially. The thing is that the Xerox claims are old enough, and I think they'll have enough trouble convincing a court that they really did enough in the way of copywriting the claims and that sort of thing, that it's hard to see Xerox being able to get a lot of money out of all the different players. And in fact, what would probably happen if if Apple did settle the lawsuit against Xerox is that Xerox would somehow agree to agree not to press its claims further.
But you could conceivably see a chain of royalty payments from, let's suppose everybody wins their respective lawsuits, a chain of royalty payments from Microsoft to Apple, from Apple to Xerox, and around, which could possibly, I wonder if it would make software in general a little bit more costly.
Oh, it's certainly conceivable that all that would happen. Typically, what happens, though, when someone agrees to make a payment for patents or for copyright licensing in the computer industry is they would pay about 1% of the sales of a product. So while conceivably it would make things more expensive, it would be a pretty small increase.
So we're talking about an impact maybe at the most of a few dollars per program.
Right.
That doesn't sound too bad or too prohibitive as far as the marketplace is concerned, does it?
No, I wouldn't think so. It's sometimes a big deal to these companies involved. Texas Instruments is discovering that the patents it got on semiconductors very early on in the computer industry are turning out to be very valuable. In 1987, it received $191 million, or more than half of its pre-tax profit, just because of the fees it received on these very early patents. And in fact, it just won a patent in Japan that could bring it $100 to $700 million a year, depending on how that all shakes out.
263-WXXI is our number to join in on Sound Bites, and good afternoon. You're on the air.
Yes, I'm calling because I just saw this week a demonstration by Hewlett Packard of their EISA machine, their ESA machine,
and they say that that their extended architecture machine has many advantages over the IBM microchannel architecture, particularly because the hardware does not have to be replaced, apparently, where you can use the hardware that you've already got in this machine. I wonder what you... I know that IBM is selling millions of these MCA machines, but Hewlett Packard was speaking very confidently about its machine. I'm wondering what your view is of how what the future is for MCA and ISA.
There's been a tremendous amount of ink used to write about the ESA and the microchannel machines over the last couple of years, and I confess that I did my part to contribute to the amount of ink. The best guess, or the best information I've been able to come up with, is after looking into this a lot, is that it really is a draw, that the ESA machines will work fine, the microchannel machines will work fine. claim that HP made with you, that you would be able to take existing hardware and use it in their ESA machine, is certainly accurate, but I don't know of anybody who really does cannibalize old machines and use the circuit boards in more advanced machines. So I think that claim is largely irrelevant on your part.
I'm wondering something else. There's also been some question about whether your existing work and your existing software and your existing data would be easily transferable from one to the other. And that's been another selling point that I've heard the so-called Gang of Nine, the ESA people, using. Is that true, and is that something that you really ought to be worried about?
With the software, you can move it from machine to machine with no problem, and you can take your data, whether it's on an ESA machine or a microchannel machine, and move that around with no problem. And that, I think, is the most crucial distinction. If there really were a problem there, then the one side or the other would have a significant advantage.
All right, caller, we hope we've answered your questions. And incidentally, if you have any questions at all, we'd like to hear from you at 263-WXXI, 263-9994. As we continue on Sound Bites, lines are open. Paul Carroll of the Wall Street Journal, their correspondent covering technological matters, including the computer industry, is on the live line with us from the New York City area. Paul, I want to know something a little bit further about this Xerox case. Could that possibly throw some complications, monkey wrenches, into the works that could slow down new application software?
There was a lot of concern about that a year and a half ago when Apple filed its suit against Microsoft and Hewlett-Packard, but it hadn't seemed to have happened. It seems that the system software people are the only ones who would have to pay, and the people who are out there developing applications haven't worried that they would somehow be liable down the line for any work they would do now.
So is the bottom line essentially that those of us out in the user community are probably not going to be much affected by this at all?
I wouldn't think so.
So we can relax easy on that.
I'm pretty sure about that one, right.
Something else I'm wondering, not specifically about this, but about the industry in general. I mentioned in the newscast up front that we're hearing about more aggressive pricing, we're hearing about a lot of bundling and rebates. It almost sounds from some of the ads like they're beginning to sell computers like they sell cars. And I'm almost seeing some of the same desperation I see in auto industry ads. Is that pretty much a good reflection of what's going on?
It's a reasonable reflection. The thing to remember with the personal computer industry is that growth is still quite strong. The auto industry and a lot of other industries would love to have 10 to 15% growth in revenue, which is roughly what the PC industry will see this year and is expected to see next year. The problems you're seeing are partly because of slowing growth in demand, but they're also because a lot of companies just haven't been able to forecast demand very well. So I would certainly say that long-term, the personal computer industry is a lot healthier than the auto industry.
So perhaps if anybody's worried, they're worrying prematurely?
Well, there is some reason to be concerned. The 10 to 15% growth is well down from the 20 to 25% growth that you saw in 88 and the 30 to 35% growth you saw in some years before that. So clearly there is a fundamental change going on in the industry. I just think that people sometimes exaggerate the depth of that change.
One thing I wonder, too, are we starting to see, we've talked about restructuring. First of all, the big boys like IBM that are taking these big charges right now, does that mean that they're going to be not only slimming down for profitability, but they're going to try to go more aggressively after market share and cut their prices?
Oh, absolutely. There's a real market share war going on. The thing is that the problems at a company like IBM relate to the mainframe area, where IBM still gets more than half its profits, and where IBM has just found itself in the middle of a price war as people try to gain market share. So some of those things are going on in areas that aren't likely to affect the machines that you and I might buy, say, for use at home, unless you need a whole lot more computing power at home than I do.
I don't think so. I don't think we're ever going to need a mainframe or a super anywhere at home. Maybe somebody's got it in this home, but I can't imagine who or what reason they'd have for it.
You never know.
But I wonder something else, too. If, in fact, there's going to be some toughening up on the part of the big boys, what's going to happen to the smaller cottage industry outfits? Are we going to start to see some of the smaller players die off?
You've already started to see some of them go. Leading Edge is a name that a lot of people will remember from a few years ago. Consumer Reports had listed them as the best of the clone companies, but that company is effectively out of business at this point. And there are a lot of other companies, even of pretty reasonable size, that are disappearing.
Now, why didn't they make it? If they had so many favorable product reviews, you'd think they'd do well.
Well, that was a somewhat complicated situation because of this entrepreneur who was running the company. I've forgotten some of the details, but he's someone who has had businesses disappear on him before because of the way he runs things. But in general, there are a couple of things going on. One is that the big boys are getting very aggressive about prices. Compaq recently has had problems because even it has felt the pressure from IBM's price cutting. But the other thing is that you just get a consolidation in an industry as it becomes a bit more mature. And at this point, people have sort of had a chance to sample all the alternatives out there and have tended to settle on companies like IBM, Compaq, and Apple, and maybe one of the smaller clone companies. So you've seen the big companies get far more or just increase their market share over the last couple of years, and of course it's been at the expense of the little guys.
Is this because the retailers don't want to handle some of the smaller guys anymore? They just want to spotlight a few brands pretty much?
That's largely it. Dealers at this point are having to carry so many products that they just don't have enough shelf space to deal with all these things. They also talk about the limited mind space. They can only really think about so many products, know about so many products to tell the customer about. So they've tried to consolidate wherever possible.
So they basically narrow it down to just a few brands, and that's going to be your choice. I wonder if that means that even though we've got a real buyer's market right now, we're going to have relatively limited choices down the road.
That's true. I'm not sure exactly how soon that will develop. It certainly seems like the competition among the big boys will be enough to keep things competitive at least through next year. But sure, in 91 or 92, you might well see prices fall less rapidly.
To the phones at 263-WXXI. We're on Soundbites. We're on the live line with Paul Carroll, technology correspondent of the Wall Street Journal. And hi, you're on the air.
Hello. I have a question about the Xerox suit. I was wondering if the Xerox suit was an attempt by Xerox to get Apple to drop their suit against Microsoft, because it seems like $150 million is a small amount of money for Apple to pay off.
I'm not sure that it was an attempt by Xerox to get Apple to drop the suit, because Xerox doesn't have any stake in that suit. Certainly there are a lot of people in the industry who just love the fact that Apple is getting sued over this. They think that Apple should have acknowledged its debt to Xerox a long time ago and should have been a little humbler than it's been. Xerox, $150 million is a reasonable amount of money, and there are things in the suit that leave it sort of open-ended. So, in fact, it would be possible for Xerox to get substantially more than $150 million out of the suit.
Thank you.
Okay, well, thank you very much for calling. We have an off-air question, which is kind of intriguing. Somebody called in and wanted to know, whatever happened to the idea of a computer-controlled home, in which I guess all the systems, everything from brewing your coffee to regulating temperature, would be controlled by some kind of a microprocessor?
There's been some progress along those lines. So the first thing that always has to happen in these situations, you have to come up with standards so that the clicker that I'd use to regulate my home would also work in your home. The problem, as usual, is that people didn't really think through what this would all cost. And at the moment, these homes are so expensive that people haven't really proceeded with them. It's one thing to think that if I sit here in my chair, it would be nice to be able to turn on the lights with a clicker. But if I have to pay $100 for that, well, I'd just soon get up out of my chair and walk 5 feet and hit the switch by hand.
Of course, I suppose, theoretically at least, would a standard PC be able to control all that circuitry and handle all that and be the traffic cop for all those commands?
Oh, absolutely. And that's one of the things that people are trying to work out now is how you set up the standards for the home so that there can be that communication between the home and the PC.
So maybe a dozen years or so down the road, it might be more common.
Right, and also, it would be one thing to rip out all the wiring in my walls now and put this stuff in. That would be expensive. But if somebody's building a home from scratch these days, it typically would be much less expensive. I mean, if you have to put wires in the home anyway. So all you would need to do is change things a little bit to use this new sort of wiring.
It is an intriguing possibility. Of course, something that people have been talking about for 50 years. It's interesting to know that it's technologically feasible now. And I suppose if something's technologically feasible, does that mean eventually it'll get done?
Eventually it will. It just is one of these things that is expensive enough that it'll be probably a decade or two before you really start to see it in a big way.
Our number is 263-WXXI. The program is Soundbites. I'm Bob Smith with Paul Carroll of the Wall Street Journal, who's one of the most dedicated watchers of the computer industry and how it's going to affect all of us in the user community. We're looking toward 1990, and I want to look now a little bit toward some things that we spoke about briefly and referred to in our on-air piece for the newscast just a few minutes ago before our interview live conversation began. And that gets to some of the popular products that are out there. I understand Compaq has got a really hot number with this laptop, with this almost notebook-size machine that it's offering nowadays. Is that going to be the wave of the future for physical format and configuration?
I sure think so, I know a lot of people who would agree. It's so much lighter than the other machines you lug around, and yet has all the capabilities. So it seems to me like a no-brainer. People will buy these things like crazy.
And, of course, you have to wonder why it is that everybody else hasn't jumped on that bandwagon already, why they're still putting out laptops that are more suitable for Paul Bunyan.
I certainly have wondered that and have asked that question of, say, IBM, which looks like it's going to be quite slow in getting a machine out of that size. Compaq just continues to be very smart. They recognize sooner than most other people the market and then are faster at being able to figure out that all the technologies finally are available or will be available by the time they'd have the machine on the market. So Compaq thought it had an advantage of 6 to 9 months. That would mean that they think a lot of other companies will come out with machines like this by sort of next summer. But Compaq just continues to be very impressive in this area.
Could they be right, or could the other companies take even longer to come out with competitors?
Oh, I've heard enough rumblings at this point that I suspect they're right, that you will see competitive products by midsummer.
Who do you think will be next?
Oh, there's a whole cast of characters that could be Zenith, Sharp, NEC, Toshiba. Those are probably the main ones.
That's interesting that most of those, with the exception of Zenith that you're mentioning, are offshore companies.
The Japanese have always done much better in smaller computers than they have in the larger desktop personal computers. That's partly because they have done very well in consumer electronics areas, and once you start to get these PCs small enough, then they start to take on some of the characteristics of consumer electronics.
What I wonder, too, since we're talking about consumer electronics, what's happening to the low end? We talked a little bit, again, on the newscast segment, and you and I have talked about this from time to time, about the scarcity of new products from the domestic industry at the lower end of the price spectrum. The early Macintoshes, the low-end Macintoshes and Apple IIs are getting some pretty gray whiskers on them, and a lot of the other companies don't even compete in that sector. What's gone wrong there?
Well, that's partly because the business market is by far the healthiest part of the PC market these days. And in the business market, people typically are looking for more, faster, better, and tend to focus on the high-end machines with the new technology, with the 486 chips and with multiple chips so that you can turn these things into file servers and run a whole network off them. So the focus has always been on the high end, and the low-end people have just sort of had to be content with whatever dribbled on down.
Is that a mistake? Would you run a company that way? Would you neglect the low-end that way?
I wouldn't neglect the low-end. I think Apple in particular has a problem because Apple always needs to compete in terms of software development with the entire IBM-compatible world, not just with a given company. And if I'm a software developer and I know that I can get access to, say, 10% of the world by writing some Macintosh software, or I can get access to 90% of the world by writing for the IBM-compatible market, then that, to me, is a fairly simple decision. So I think Apple really needs to, at some point, get as many low-end Macintoshes out there as possible just to grab the market share and be able to make a more compelling argument to the software developers.
But they're not going to do it for another 12 months. That's got to worry them.
They've been quite slow about that. I've heard Apple talking for, probably a year and a half now about how they would bring out a low-end machine, and I was surprised recently to find out that it would be almost another year before they'd actually be able to bring these things to market. I'm not quite sure why that is, but it, I think, is a significant problem.
Little trouble in paradise out in Cupertino, maybe?
Seemingly.
Going to be interesting to watch that. Paul Carroll, thank you very much for being with us in this segment of Soundbites. I wonder if in the end we're going to see everybody slashing prices even more.
My guess is that first prices are pretty aggressive at the moment because of Christmas. But yeah, I think for the first 6 months or so of next year anyway, you will see people be pretty aggressive about cutting prices.
And that is the one best piece of news we could get, a buyer's market. Paul Carroll, thanks for being with us on the line. And a reminder, coming up during the second segment of Soundbites, which gets started just a little while from now, Mitch Pendleton of Word Perfect Corporation is going to introduce us to the world of word processing and, of course, his specific Word Perfect 5.1, which is a brand new release, lots of new features, and we'll be finding out about that and answering your questions about word processing and Word Perfect at 263-WXXI. And coming up in the third segment of our program, Neil Edwards is going to be commenting on the developments surrounding the OS2 system. All that's ahead on Soundbites on WXXI. You're listening to Soundbites on WXXI 1370. I'm Bob Smith, and 263-WXXI is the number to join in on our open lines to get your questions answered. The topic of this segment of the program is the world of words, specifically of word processing, which may very well be, the statistics are close on this, what more of us do more often than anything else we do on our personal computers. Mitch Pendleton of Word Perfect is on hand with us to discuss the world of words, processing them, and his new release 5.1 of Word Perfect and what it does. And Mitch, it's good to have you with us.
Thank you very much. Good to be here.
Now, word processing, I guess it's fair to say, if it's not number one, it's pretty close, isn't it,
That's
as far
correct.
As applications?
That's correct.
Now, I wonder how much word processing power the average person should need. How do you know when you're deciding what to do, and you're even bringing out, I guess, varying levels of your program? I'm hearing about an executive version, and then, of course, there's the regular version. How do you know to evaluate just how much word processing power you really need? How should you look at your own needs?
Well, I think that it depends on a certain application or particular application that that you have. We find that a lot of people say, well, we don't need all the power that certain word processing features are included in Word Perfect. But we're finding that we want to put on the market Word Perfect for most anyone, those that want to just write a simple memo, to those that want to do complicated table of authorities or equations or even tables. So I think Word Perfect in itself is a product that's available for any type of user. I know it's hard to judge where I draw the line, you know, or where a person draws the line, but for most people's needs, Word Perfect.
Fair to say that what you and most of your competitors that try to go at the top end of the word processing spectrum try to do is figure out any conceivable need that most people would possibly have and try to fit it in?
Well, that's correct. One of the great things about Word Perfect is that we're a customer-driven company. We go off the suggestions that that the customers give us as far as what they want to see in word processing and also in the other products that we have, everything from spreadsheets to databases to our new release of Draw Perfect that will be out early in 90. And so we listen to people, we listen to what they say, and we try to include that.
I want to get to the Draw Perfect a little later when I talk about interfaces with publishing and graphics, but let's look at 5.1 first of all. What's that have that 5.0 and its predecessors don't?
That's a good question. Again, we listened to our customers, and they said we want to see items like pull-down menus and mouse support, and so we've included that now. Very functional mouse support, and again, typical style of pull-down menus.
Who haven't seen that yet, who may be working with earlier versions or may not be familiar with this kind of visual interface, you might want to explain just what that is.
Well, typically Word Perfect has been built on a function key interface, and we've expanded that now to enable a person to go to the top of the screen and literally drop a menu or pull a menu down on the screen to select the specific function that they want to have accomplished in Word Perfect.
Analogous to either going through a file drawer and pulling files
out. That's correct.
Or sounds not unlike some of the things that people have been doing with their Macs.
That's correct. Also, I wanted to mention that our Mac product is also up and coming, and that's something that I think in the future you'll see a big push toward early in 90.
Seems like everybody, though, who's working mostly for the IBM-compatible world is trying to make it more user-friendly and trying to emulate some of the functioning, the feel and the look of the Mac.
That's correct. Well, we're trying to make it a product for everyone, pretty much. And again, we listen to our customers. If they want something, we try to incorporate that in our next release. And so the biggest thing, as I said, the most requested feature was, let's put in pull-down menus and mouse support.
And that's not all. Though, right?
That's correct. One of the biggest features that we've included is the ability now to create a table with just a limited number of keystrokes. For anyone before that tried to create a table, for example, with line draw, the capability there, it was very difficult, and I think we lost a lot of secretaries that way. But now with the tables feature, it's included on a function key or the pull-down menu, and you simply go in and specify the number of columns and rows, and the table is generated automatically.
In other words, I can create columns of figures or comments or what have you that can make something look not unlike, I suppose, a spreadsheet report in a way.
Well, that's correct. In fact, it's set up in cell definitions like a spreadsheet, and also we've included the ability now with Word Perfect to import directly from Lotus, Plan Perfect, or Excel spreadsheets, and it will come and build the table depending upon the cell definition that you have.
Now that gets, of course, very interesting because that enables you to do things like, for example, corporate reports a lot more easily.
Oh, exactly. And, of course, we're leaning toward those suggestions that the customers have wanted, one of which has been able, I need to be able to do a table better. I need to be able to customize my application. And so that's what we've done.
That gets interesting because it leads me to do two things. First of all, to invite you to make your comments and your thoughts and make your requests at 263-WXXI as to what you'd like a perfect word processing program to do, whether it be Word Perfect or whatever, because we have with us Mitch Pendleton of Word Perfect right now, and he's listening to you, and he will perhaps be able to relay your requests for a future edition of the program to corporate management, and who knows, you may make a suggestion that might end up on release 5.2 or 5.3. You never know. All you have to do in order to do that is call us at 263-WXXI, 263-9994. Let us know what you'd like to see in a future edition of Word Perfect or other word processing programs, things that you'd like to see if you're working with the world of words. And I'd also like to ask something else, too, and that is what your most recent customer requests are. You're probably getting feedback from the field all the time, right?
Well, that's correct. Again, because we're just releasing 5.1, those, of course, represent the most requested items that they wanted to see. And we just got word yesterday that 5.2, of course, will be looked at in the near future, and we will listen to our customers. One of the things that's been discussed is a collapsible outline. And other than that, I'm really not sure as to what other requests have been made, but we're constantly keeping a database on those requests, and we'll put them in as needed.
Well, if you'd like to interface with that particular database and contribute your thoughts to it, 263-WXXI is how you do it. And good afternoon. You're on the air.
Yes. I'm trying to make a big decision between buying the new WordPerfect and the new WordStar. I understand you're in a situation where you don't want to get into a big advertisement scheme here, but are there any major differences between the two? I know they're both pretty powerful word processing programs. Can you if you possibly can, as an objective third party, can you any big differences between the two?
Well, I think that the biggest difference between the two would be this, that number one is our customer support base. That is really the backbone of WordPerfect. If you buy WordPerfect, we offer you over 500 operators back in Orem, Utah, that take roughly about 10,000 calls a day that will answer any question that you have as far as installation or use of any WordPerfect product. Also, the power of WordPerfect and also its place in the market right now. Right now, we're looking between 60 and 70% of the North American market as far as word processing is concerned. And so with those two items, plus the availability over 10 different platforms, I think WordPerfect is an excellent choice for any word processing needs.
I see. Okay, one real quick question, science fiction type question. The way things have proliferated so fast over the last few years in word processing, give me your opinion on where do you think word processing will be in, say, in 10 years? Can you...
Well,
speculate?
I don't really like to speculate, but I'm going to step out on a limb and say that I don't think we're going to stop at all. WordPerfect, in our general outlook, 10 years from now, we're going to see word processing, of course, an integral part of an everyday life as it is today. And who knows, you know, maybe in the year 2000 we might have vocalized word processing. You never know. But, again, I don't like to speculate.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you very much for calling. Now, you've raised a vision in my head of WordPerfect release 9.0 or something like that, and my actually maybe turning on the computer, hitting a couple of keys to bring the program in off my hard disk, and then I'm going to pick up a mic and start talking, and it's going to generate text.
You know, you never know with technology the way it's progressing. I think that... Well, even in the last 5 years, what we're doing today as compared with 5 years ago is just incredible. And I think, let's say 10 years from now, we're going to see things that we never even thought possible with word processing.
What interests me, too, is the possibility, equal possibility, that the computer itself will respond or be able to respond with certain software to verbal commands as to what to do, even before I get into the part of the program where I'm actually feeding text in.
That's correct. It'll be interesting to see the way technology progresses.
Theoretically, with hardware, it's feasible now. We're just waiting for the software to be able to handle it, right?
Well, as far as I know, yeah.
That's exciting. I suppose that's way down the line. That is release 9.0, isn't it?
That's right. Way down the line.
263-WXXI is our number, and let's go back to the phones. Good afternoon. You're on the air on Sound Bites.
Hi. I use a real old version of WordPerfect, which is to say it's pre-5.0. And I'm just wondering about, you know, how you go about upgrading and you know, how you can do that without paying the full shebang and that kind of stuff.
That's an excellent question. It's very easy for a user to upgrade from any version to 5.1. All you need to do is send in the title page, which is the first page from the gray binder that's included with WordPerfect. would be nice if you put down your license number on that page, the type of printer that you have, so that we can send you the correct printer disk if it's different than printer disk 1 through 4. Also, the media that you would like, 3.5 or 5.25. And the cost in U.S. dollars is $85 plus $250 shipping and handling. You can send that directly to WordPerfect, and they'll send you out an entirely new binder, workbook, and, of course, the disks.
Well, this is a little bit embarrassing, but what if you've lost your book?
That's another good question. As long as you send in your registration card beforehand, WordPerfect keeps a file, a database of those people that did that, and you need to call them. I can give you an 800 number. It's 1-800-321-4566, and simply explain to them what has happened, and they'll look your name up and find the registration number for you.
Can you give me that number again?
Yes, 1-800-321-4566. That's information and brochures.
Okay, thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
Okay, and I thank you very much for calling. 263-WXXI, of course, is how you call us in order to make the connection on Soundbites. 8750 updates me even from one of the early releases.
That's
early,
correct.
Early?
Yeah, any release at all, any version up to 5.1, it's 8750 total.
Which is very interesting because, I mean, let's face it, the retail price of any program of this type is going to be a multiple of that.
Yeah, retail price of WordPerfect products right now are $4.95.
Now, of course, a lot of stores discount that. How does the company feel about the discounting? Is it just sort of shrugged off as a matter of course?
Well, we leave it up to, of course, the distributor and the dealer in the end to set their own prices. And we do not send out a list that says you have to sell it at this. We specify the retail price and let them go from there.
So shopping around would probably, possibly, conceivably get you a real bargain on this or any other major commercial software.
In this area, we're finding that there's a fairly good consistency as far as prices. However, if the user wants to shop around, I'd fully support that.
And I wonder if that's going to get more and more to be the case, if there's going to be more and more aggressive discounting. We're seeing it on hardware right now, as we mentioned in our first segment. I wonder if we're going to be seeing it on software as well.
Maybe so. We leave that up to the specific area, and I think it depends on the product itself and the use of the product as to the fluctuation of the price.
I suppose if you've got a big market share and a lot of demand, things are going to be a little bit more firm.
That's correct.
I wonder something else, too. Let's look a little bit at some of the questions which have arisen concerning some various aspects of software nowadays. Haven't heard about this specifically with any WordPerfect product, but a lot of the major spreadsheet packages, I know you've got PlanPerfect, and I've not heard anything about this with relation to PlanPerfect, but I know Lotus 1-2-3 and some of its latest releases, I know they're 3.0, and their other previous release, I think it's 2.2, has had some problem working with Windows, which is that enhancement for the DOS operating system. Are you hearing anything, or is there any potential problem with the latest WordPerfect releases as far as working with Windows at all?
Well, what we're doing right now with Windows products in general is we're generating software in that area. PlanPerfect right now, to be honest with you, I have not received the latest information on PlanPerfect 5.0 and Windows itself. We are, however, developing a Windows word processing package that will be available in the middle of 1990, and we're looking towards that arena like we are in any of the other areas in the software.
So there is a Windows version of WordPerfect that's coming on board, then?
That's right. We're developing a Windows version and a OS 2 Presentation Manager version pretty much simultaneously, and that should be available in the summer of 1990.
Now, of course, in the meantime, if I'm thinking about putting in Windows, I'm thinking about using Windows, and I also want to continue using my existing WordPerfect, or maybe I want to get the new 5.1, maybe I want to update if I've got a previous edition already, is there any serious chance I might have some trouble as of right now? Are you hearing signs of any trouble the way, again, we are hearing of trouble between Lotus 1-2-3 and Windows? Because I'm not hearing it right now.
Well, I think we're doing the best we can to write the kind of software that will get rid of the trouble, so to speak, as soon as possible. We want to create a professional software package, and as we're doing that this coming year, I think you'll find WordPerfect Windows will be very good.
Should I wait to get either Windows, or should I wait to update WordPerfect if I've already got Windows until everything comes together as far as product-wise, or would I have a good chance of making it work if I try the existing products?
Well, I think that what a person, if they are in the Windows area right now, I think that it would be smart to wait until we release WordPerfect for Windows. If you're in the DOS environment right now, going to 5.1, I think, is a very intelligent choice, because it provides a lot of features that are not available on the market, and features that people have been requesting. Everything, of course, from the tables to equation editor, and small fixes with tabs and labels and other things that people have wanted to see.
I notice you're also finally getting around to, as you said, OS 2 and to Presentation Manager, to working with Presentation Manager. Seems like that's been around for a while. This will get into, incidentally, the commentary that Neil Edwards will have at the end of the program, but it seems like OS 2's been around for a while, and everybody now is just getting around to writing the application software that's working with it. I'm wondering why that is. Neil is going to say that it has something to do with the limited distribution of OS 2 in connection with IBM PS2 products. Has that been discouraging software manufacturers from writing applications for it?
Oh, I don't think so. As far as WordPerfect is concerned, we were one of the first applications to come out on OS 2 with our release of 5.0, which we're presently at right now. And with our PM product that will be coming out in the middle of next year, it's going to be right up with the 5.1 area that we have now on DOS. And I don't know really why others are holding back, but I think that OS 2, like any other software product or hardware in that sense, it takes some time for people to get used to it and discover really what the need is to go to that and why they would want it.
It was kind of a slow builder. Did that surprise you at all?
No, not really. I'm not in the position to comment on something like that being an IBM product.
Our number is 263-WXXI. The program is Soundbites, and we are talking about word processing, and specifically about the WordPerfect family of products with Mitch Pendleton of WordPerfect. And, of course, we're taking your calls at 263-WXXI and getting input from you on where you'd like to see word processing programs go, what you'd like to see that maybe you like in the current programs, or maybe that you'd like to see included on future editions, because, as Mitch mentioned a few minutes ago, your input has a lot to do with where they go in future releases. They're working on 5.2 right now, and you never know. Maybe your telephone call might just possibly generate some changes in the next release. Got some calls on the line right now, which we will be getting to in just a second at 263-WXXI. Matter of fact, let's take one. Hi, you're on the air. Go ahead, please. Go ahead, please. You're on the air. We're trying to get you on. Are you there?
Yes, thank you.
Go ahead.
My proposal to the representative from WordPerfect is that they consider developing a laptop version of WordPerfect. 5.0 is such a large program that once you have it on a RAM disk, on, for example, a Toshiba 1000, you have no room left on the disk. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much for calling.
What I'd like to suggest to the caller is that we have a product that specifically was made for the laptop environment called WordPerfect Executive. Right now it is at the 4.2 level, but they're working to upgrade that, of course, to include the features and some of the features of 5.0 and 5.1. That's a very good product that includes a number of different applications besides word processing. It includes database and spreadsheet, some office features in our office product like appointment calendars, and other features that would help a person on the go and with a laptop environment where they don't have a lot of space.
That's an integrated package, basically.
That's correct.
So, it looks like he can already get what he wants, then. 263-WXXI, good morning, good afternoon, I should say. You're on the air.
Yes, thank you. As far as the Xenix and the DOS operating systems are concerned, I was wondering if WordPerfect has any plans to be able to put WordPerfect into Xenix so that the files can be ported between the DOS and the Xenix systems.
Presently on that environment, we're at the 4.2 level as well, the Unix Xenix environment, and we're trying as much as possible to have WordPerfect on the different platforms and be able to transfer those files without or relatively small problems.
So Xenix is WordPerfect is already in Xenix?
Yeah, we have that environment right now at the 4.2 level.
Great.
Okay, well, thank you very much for calling. Now, you would be missing some of the latest features of 5.0 and 5.1, though.
That's correct. We're at the 4.2 level. They're looking at 1990 is where we'll be upgrading that. In fact, 1990 itself is going to be quite a year for WordPerfect because there will be a lot of upgrades and different products that will be coming out. And so 1990 is going to be a very, very good year.
And we go to the phones again at 263-WXXI. Good afternoon. You're on the air on Soundbites.
Good afternoon. I had two questions. One's a follow-up for the one you just had on Xenix. Do you have an approximate date for 5.0 on Xenix?
All I can say on that is we're looking at mid-1990.
Mid-1990. Okay. The other question was, for my home use, I already have 5.0.
Right.
But I've heard you've been asked three times now as to whether there has been any problems with 5.0 and Windows. And you have avoided the question three times. Could you please answer, has there been any problems?
Well, right now, because we haven't developed WordPerfect for Windows right now, I'm not in the position to, you know, to say go out and get WordPerfect and put it on Windows. It will run. I haven't specifically seen it on Windows, to be honest with you, right now. But we're waiting for our own Windows product to come out mid-1990.
Would it be fair?
You're saying there really has, you have heard of some problems, and we should probably wait because there have been problems.
Well, I haven't heard of any. To be honest with you, I have not. I haven't been in the Windows environment enough with going around the way that I do to make an accurate statement on that.
Okay.
So, in other words, bottom line basically is you haven't heard of anything going wrong yet, but
right.
You haven't been around enough to know whether there is.
That's correct.
A lot of people, of course, will probably assume that, hey, no news is good news. Since we're not hearing the same things about your programs that we're hearing about Lotus, maybe we should take the risk and go ahead.
Well, again, it just depends on a person's individual liking an application. My personal recommendation right now would be to wait and wait till we come out with the Windows product mid-90 and then go with it then. And if they're familiar with WordPerfect and what we do now, I think our Windows product will be a very good product.
But of course, bottom line, you're not hearing any specific complaints of glitches right now, really.
That's correct.
You? One thing I wonder too, interface with publishing and graphics.
Okay.
What's there?
Good question. A lot of people say, you know, you're leaning toward desktop publishing, and we've never marketed WordPerfect as a desktop publisher. But I think the gap between word processing software and desktop publishing is narrowing, in that we're providing features now that enable a person to not only do professional word processing, but provide documents that have a professional desktop publishing atmosphere.
So the news is getting good on that one, too. And with that, I'm afraid we'll have to conclude and say thank you to Mitch Pendleton of WordPerfect for being with us on Soundbites. You're listening to Soundbites on WXXI 1370. Now let's hear from Neil Edwards, whose commentary concerns the growth, or should we say non-growth, of OS 2.
A few weeks ago, I noticed an article in the paper about OS 2. IBM and Microsoft were instituting measures aimed at bolstering the sales of the OS 2 operating system. The article goes on to state that IBM announced it more than 2 years ago, when it announced a new line of personal computers, but the software never caught on. Fewer than 200,000 copies have been sold. Now, just what is OS 2, and just what is an operating system? Anyone who uses a PC is familiar with DOS, or at least what DOS is. DOS, the disk operating system, and the BIOS, basic input-output system, are the traffic cops, the interface, the interpreter that translates what your program is doing in the kind of language that the machine can understand. Without DOS, you would not be able to read or write a disk, type on the keyboard, or print to the screen. In fact, without the BIOS, you could not even turn the computer on. Well, DOS came into being about 10 years ago. It was written by Microsoft and has become a standard in the PC industry. A few problems. DOS is very limited in its scope. For instance, with DOS, you can only do one thing at a time. You don't have the ability to do multitasking. The big machines are able to do it, not because they're more powerful, but because their operating systems are designed for multitasking. You see, computers do things so fast that most of the time is spent twiddling their thumbs waiting for human input. So while the computer is twiddling its thumbs, it could very well be engaged in another task, or many tasks, each taking a small percentage of the computer's resources. When OS 2 was announced, that was one of the advantages of OS 2 over DOS. The computer magazines began to write articles about OS 2 and its companion, the Presentation Manager. Indeed, OS 2 was to be the next generation of operating systems for the PC. So if it's so great, why isn't anyone buying it? Well, about 6 months ago, I decided that I wanted to upgrade to OS 2. With a checkbook in hand, I went to my local computer store. Sorry, but they don't sell OS 2. I looked through the mail order sections of the magazines. No ads for OS 2. After about a week of beating my head against the wall, I picked up the phone to call Microsoft. They wrote it, so they ought to know where I could buy it. Sorry again. OS 2 is not for sale. You can't buy it. No wonder sales are so bad. If no one can buy it, buy it. Sorry again. OS 2 is not for sale. You can't buy it. No wonder sales are so bad. If no one can buy it, if it isn't even on the market, then what are IBM and Microsoft griping about? Well, the catch-22 seems to be that the only a few computer manufacturers are licensed to provide OS 2 as an operating system, and only when you buy one of their machines. So, if you want OS 2, then you have to junk your old computer and go out and spend megabucks on a special computer that comes with OS 2 already in it from the factory. And with the millions of computers in existence that are already running DOS, I don't foresee OS 2 catching on until someone gets smart and actually begins to sell it. For Sound Bites, I'm Neil Edwards.
You're listening to Sound Bites on WXXI 1370. Our thanks to Neil Edwards for offering those comments concerning the growth, or should we say non-growth, of OS 2 and Presentation Manager. This has been Sound Bites, our edition of December 17th, 1989. I'm Bob Smith. Esther Vail is our technical director. Adam Wilcox, our producer. Coming up next week, we'll have a special Christmas edition of the program in which we'll be talking to some of the leading commentators in the computer industry concerning what we can expect, perhaps, or hope for, at least, under the Christmas tree. And then, of course, stay tuned for our special New Year's Eve edition as well, when we'll be talking to commentators concerning what's up for 1990. Special 2 weeks of pre-recorded editions of Sound Bites, and then, of course, we will be live once again at the beginning of the new year as well. In case I don't have a chance to do it before now, I'm Bob Smith, wishing you the happiest of holiday seasons and inviting you to stay with us again next week for Sound Bites on WXXI 1370.